Hello, my name is Brian Novoselsky, and welcome to the Over the Counter podcast. Today, we are joined by Michael Kleinrock, Director of Research Development at IQVIA. Welcome, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
So today, we're going to be discussing IQVIA's recent report titled Understanding the Use of Medicines in the U.S. 2025, led by Michael and his team at IQVIA. So Michael, to start, what is the importance of the report, and why might pharmacists need to be aware of its key trends?
Well, this is something we've been doing every year. So thanks for having us. And you know, I think we find our audience grows and evolves every year, but we produce this report every year because the use of medicines in the U.S. is not otherwise centrally reported. And so we're providing appropriate and helpful context from a whole range of stakeholder perspectives. For example, we title the report The Use of Medicines because we're focused on what happens, not necessarily purely financial aspects of it, which is often a topic of other reporting. So, you know, when we're looking at, you know, what pharmacists or others might be interested in, we are really wondering, for example, with over 330 million people, with an aging population, with pandemic in the last 5 years, with a number of new medicines and shifts in available treatment modalities, what's changing? What's the same? What are the trends? And, you know, keeping that macro perspective, that overview on a market this complex really helps you then dive into specific topics you're interested in, but to have some context. And our continuity with having done this now since 2011, we've been publishing this report. So this is, you know, there's a long history of putting out a lot of the same things looked at in the same way. It really helps people see what's changing and what's staying the same.
Awesome. Yeah, I really like that specification of the use of medications really sets the report apart. Diving into it, so what are some of the biggest drivers of medication spending right now, and how have they evolved over the years?
Well, you know, one of the big issues, and certainly in terms of spending, immunology, oncology, these are the, you know, oncology is the largest area by spending. Immunology is right up there, diabetes and obesity. I think, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, oncology and immunology are thankfully rarer uses of medicines. So thankfully, we don't necessarily have as many people who have those conditions as, say, have high blood pressure or, you know, other cardiometabolic conditions, although there's, you know, there's importance in all of those areas. So in terms of spending, you know, oncology with a continued flow of new medicines, hundreds of new medicines, you know, every few years, and additional uses of them, we're seeing, you know, changes in survival that are really significant. In immunology, you know, we started out with immunology 20 plus years ago, thinking about rheumatoid arthritis being treated as an autoimmune disease. And we think about psoriasis and Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis. And then there's been a proliferation of other autoimmune diseases that these same medicines work for. And so now we have this whole area of immunology treatment, which is also burgeoning and growing, even as some of the older medicines have started to go off patent, the biggest of those being adalimumab, Humira, losing patent protection in early 2023, and, you know, and starting to see more biosimilar usage more recently. And the biosimilar story there for adalimumab is one that's really telling, again, from a pharmacy perspective, about when will switching between an originator and a biosimilar happen, from a clinical perspective or from a financial arrangement or formulary perspective. And certainly the first year of that biosimilar didn't see much adoption. But the second year, where there were specific arrangements between some plans and specific manufacturers, those arrangements and preferences really started to shift things. And so we see what insurance you have and what contracting those insurance plans make with other participants start to have a really big impact on what medicines you as a patient receive. And I think that's, you know, that's a little kernel in here that's really illustrating how complex the situation is. I have, you know, some other issues around use and spending on medicine that I find just really kind of surprising and really critical to think about. And if I start with something like obesity, which I think you're surprised I didn't mention yet, but the obesity treatments with GLP-1s has been, you know, a generational uptake of medicine, particularly because insurance has not been covering those medicines for people to the same degree as they traditionally do with other new medicines. So that's definitely in that category. But since, you know, we think about, you know, public health, antibacterial use is one of those things that's really important, especially if we're going to avoid antimicrobial resistance. So we don't want to have bad stewardship, as it were. And what we've been seeing, and in the report, we have a, I'd say, modestly concerning rise of these sort of reserve antibacterials. It's something that WHO defines as medicines we should use less and reserve for those worst case scenarios. And those are, that usage is going up. Additionally, vaccinations of all kinds are below pre-pandemic levels and are really down. So adult, pediatric, and seasonal. And I think we've seen in the past week some reporting of some of the mortality from the flu season this year, which is concerning, again, if vaccination rates are low. So, you know, that's a little bit of a public health flavor. Additionally, overdose deaths from opioids were down 30% in 2024. So that's huge. And a lot of that is attributable to the availability of over-the-counter reversal agents, which is a policy that was implemented a couple of years ago, but we're really starting to see that have some impact. And overall prescription opioid use is now down at the 1999 level. So we had this whole long story of, you know, opioids rising from the 90s up until 2011 and then coming back down. Well, now we're back down to the late 90s levels. So that's all of that. There's so much going on. And here's the reason we make this report and the reason if you print it off, it'll hold the door open.
Obviously, there's so much ongoing and things popping up. So we'll try to touch on it as much as we can within the whole report. So kind of moving around here, wanted to touch on something that could be specifically impactful within the U.S. But how do you expect federal or state policy to impact U.S. drug spending in the next few years?
So there's a number. Wow. You know, we have already beginning to be implemented. The Inflation Reduction Act has a number of provisions that affect patient out-of-pocket cost. Certainly the things like $35 caps on insulins, the $2,000 cap on out-of-pocket in Medicare, that $2,000 cap was phased in. So the 2024 value is more like $3,500 with deductibles. So it's not exactly here yet. But even in that, we saw a pretty significant impact in the number of patients who were being exposed to very high cost. And this ties very specifically to an analytic that we've been doing for a while, which is how does the exposure to cost impact patient abandonment of prescriptions? So, you know, sticker shock. And so patient walks into a pharmacy and the pharmacist says, yep, here's your prescription, got it from your doctor, it's going to be $250. So more than half of those people just walk away. We've done studies over the years looking at that, comparing it to household incomes, comparing it to other features. And basically, it doesn't matter if you're wealthy or not, those abandonment rates are very similar. So this is something where patients are just abandoning prescriptions they would otherwise be recommended by their provider or by their clinician. And that has a number of consequences. But if, for example, your benefit design shifts according to this change in the law and your exposure to cost is dramatically reduced, there will almost certainly be incremental demand from those patients who would then be able to fill prescriptions they would otherwise not be filling, or they would be rationing, or they would be picking some pills to fill and not others. All of those kinds of things, which I think pharmacists particularly care a lot about when we're thinking about drug interaction or unintended consequences of the prescription protocol. So, you know, for me, that's probably the feature. I mean, I think the insulin price cuts that companies have already done have started to have an effect, and the number of people who are paying more than $35 for an insulin prescription has dropped really like a stone. So we've also seen similar activity happen for respiratory products for asthma and COPD. So that's also, you know, affecting some patients where the companies have decided to drop those prices. If we think more about what the Trump administration is proposing and discussing for various other pricing policies and what's coming forward, you know, I think our perspective has been, let's model the impact of things that have been announced and made into policy. We find that the speculation is challenging. And that what we hope with our reports is to put something that helps you understand a baseline without the effect of those scenarios. So, you know, one is able to take a perspective on what some policies could do and adjust our overall perspective from that. But we try to avoid speculation because it sounds a little bit incendiary.
You touched on a lot of the different medication classes, but and kind of some of the disease states that they would be set aside for going forward. But I kind of wanted to dive a little deeper into that. So what disease states are medicines being spent on the most right now? And where are those trends kind of headed?
So, I mean, really the leading therapy area for spending is oncology. That trend is in the low to mid teens in terms of growth rate you know, currently it's going to be slowing to upper single digits through the forecast period, basically because two of the leading drugs, there's immune checkpoint inhibitors, Opdivo, nivolumab is the molecule, and pembrolizumab is Keytruda. Two of those are going off patent in 28 and 29, so 2028, 2029. And those are, you know, backbone therapies across a whole range of solid tumors and becoming first-line therapies. And the impact of those medicines having lower cost options will be pretty significant, slowing the growth. But at the same time, we still see a continued flow of novel cancer drugs across a range of tumors. And it's just new biomarkers, new approaches, new specificity for individuals, new technology, bispecific antibodies, not just one antibody target, but two trispecifics, antibody drug conjugates with a chemotherapy payload linked to an antibody, cell and gene therapies, these CAR T, very personalized medicines, increasingly available. Often those very high-end medicines are for very few people. So driving spending, as you say, Brian, is a very, you know, is often very few people. If we're thinking about immunology, there's a slightly larger group of patients across a range of diseases, and we're seeing new diseases open up as immunology treatments. And so there's more and more people who are benefiting. Additionally, for many, many years, if you had sort of one of these autoimmune diseases, you might get a symptom management medicine rather than a disease-modifying agent. As we see more and more medicines in those categories, you're going to start to see more and more people treated. And we see volume growing at 8-10%. So it's not just dollars growing at these high levels. It's, you know, volume and treated patients and adhering patients. But we also see rare disease. There are, you know, of the 48 drugs launched in the novel drugs launched in the U.S. in 2024, 31 of them were orphan drugs. So, you know, these are increasingly, you know, new treatment options for patients who might have no others. So, you know, there's a lot going on there. The orphans don't necessarily drive overall spending as much, although there are large numbers of them. And a lot of that has to do because essentially their prices are high, but high price generally correlates with low volume. And if you want the answer, obesity is going to have an impact.
Yeah, for sure. I think that kind of segues into my next question with kind of the outlier drugs and things that could present challenges. So when it does come to pharmacy reimbursements specifically, what findings from the report may present major challenges or barriers for pharmacy sustainability going forward?
So, you know, we have some challenges in this report in that we have not really looked at pharmacist or pharmacy business models. So that the sustainability is a question where, you know, we're observing. Others are talking about, you know, pharmacy closures, pharmacy consolidation. There, you know, one can observe and has to speculate that there's an economic driver behind this and the pressures are significant. I've heard others comment about the, you know, the nature of what kind of margin pharmacies make on specific drugs. And sometimes they're not making much margin on branded drugs, more margin on generics. That's been a longstanding set of issues. You know, we have almost 90% of prescriptions dispensed as generic. And if that's where the margin is, one of the challenges, if prices continue to deflate in the generic space, which they have, if margins are under pressure, that's certainly an issue. If patients are struggling to pay, you know, those are also issues. And so, you know, if the degree to which novel branded medicines are in demand and they are not necessarily profitable, that does create some tensions and some pressures. Pharmacists for a decade or more have been pushing out of the silo of just dispensing the prescription to show that they're providing services. In the past few years, we've seen pharmacy contracts for the preferred dispensing of vaccines, for example, be a new avenue. A lot of those vaccines are moving out of the primary care office and into the preferred pharmacy network. And those are also avenues. In addition, you see some of the larger chains looking at specific tie-ups with manufacturers, say for the biosimilars, as I'd mentioned. So I can see a lot of symptoms of the pressures that the pharmacy sector is under. I don't have a crystal ball as to what that means or where it goes, but the pressure is probably not getting less.
Awesome. I think this has been a great conversation, kind of tackling different parts of the report and kind of what that means for the overarching industry. I really just wanted to, are there any other key takeaways that you feel should be mentioned or that we weren't able to touch on today?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't talked about the shift to specialty drugs that's been going on over the past decade, and over half the spending right now is specialty, but it's like 3% of the volume. So that's what we're dealing with, is the very specialty medicines. And, you know, from a pharmacy sector perspective, you know, remember that a lot of the specialty medicines have specialized distribution that, you know, don't go through your more traditional pharmacies on the corner. So if we are seeing a separation of pharmacy dispensing into specialty pharmacy, where the money is, and a more traditional bricks and mortar, where large volumes of patients and managing complex patients with comorbidities and multiple drugs and drug interactions and all of the kinds of things that we deal with, and patient cost concerns, that's a division in terms of the types of experience of the market we're seeing. And those economic realities for patients and for pharmacies are certainly kind of obvious at this point. You know, the other challenge I think that pharmacists see face-to-face every day is that patient out-of-pocket costs is an opaque, confusing, and constantly shifting dynamic. And they are having to figure out, can my patient afford this? Is there a coupon program? Is there some other mechanism? Do I have to call the doctor's office and ask them to change something? So no individual patient engagement ends up being simple, and that's potentially exhausting. So, you know, you can definitely understand some of the pressures and some of the challenges. And I think, you know, we see a system that is continuing to grow as our population grows at a nice steady level. But as also as we age, more and more people are being the kinds of people who are going to get some of these more specialty conditions. So it's definitely some pressures building in that system, but some enthusiasm for the kinds of breakthrough medicines that continue to appear.
Awesome. I think that's a perfect way to cap this off. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Well, thanks for having us. And I hope everyone likes to read the report.
Thank you.